On the latest episode of BCC The Other Side, our recurring winter series, Northern Frights, continues as we take a look at the beautiful blonde Bigfoot of Ontario, Old Yellowtop, and review some snowy Bigfoot videos on an all-new installment of Bryce's Secret Stash. Plus, every week we are recapping each episode of Season 2 of Expedition Bigfoot with our very own Bryce Johnson. To explore the parallel dimension of Bigfoot Collectors Club, head to patreon.com/Bigfoot Collectors Club to subscribe to BCC The Other Side.
It's Bigfoot Collectors Club with Bryce and Michael. I know a ghost story or two. Let's do this.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to a brand new episode. Can you welcome someone back to something that's brand new? I don't know if that really works, but sure. Welcome back to Bigfoot Collectors Club, the show where we talk to amazing guests about their personal paranormal history and share stories of high strangeness. I'm your host, Michael McMillan. With me always is your other host,
Bryce Johnson,
and our super producer,
Riley Bray.
Oh my gosh, you guys. There it is. That's it. That's the show. Thank you so much. Everybody, go get regressed. We'll see you next week. I'm so excited. We're breaking format a little bit today because we have an experts episode.
Yes.
We have two phenomenal guests on today whose work we've been aware of for a while on the show. A lot of you guys have been hitting us up about the books that we've recommended, the books we've read on the show. We'll be assembling a list, an index somewhere. We're going to do this. We have a couple help from listeners. But file these two authors and creators in your notes because you're going to want to check out their work. We just reviewed their book, Where the Footprints End, High Strangeness and the Bigfoot Phenomenon, Volume 1 of 2, Volume 1 Folklore, over on BCC The Other Side. So let's bring them in. Our first guest is a published composer and maintains an active performing and recording schedule as a tuba player based out of Atlanta. First tuba player I think we've had on the show.
Mm-hmm.
He has appeared on dozens of programs, including Coast to Coast AM, and is regularly invited to speak at paranormal conferences about his books. He's contributed to Robbie Graham's 2017 essay collection, UFOs, Reframing the Debate, as well as David Weatherly's 2018 collection, Woodknocks, Volume 3. He's also appeared on the hit History Channel television show, Ancient Aliens, and is a recurring guest on Where Did the Road Go? Our second guest is an author, an illustrator, amazing illustrator, by the way, folk musician living in Pennsylvania. His illustrations have appeared in the pages of various books, magazines, fanzines, and comics, as well as many other many record and CD covers. Since 1995, this guy has been making music both solo and with his band. Get ready for this. It's awesome. It's an awesome name. Stone Breath.
Yeah.
He's the creator of Strange Familiars, a podcast concerning the paranormal, weird history, folklore, and the occult. He makes regular appearances on the paranormal radio show Where Did the Road Go? And has appeared as a guest on many other podcasts and radio programs, including Coast to Coast AM. Club Scouts of the world, please welcome to the show Joshua Kutchin and Timothy Renner.
Yeah!
All right.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, it's lovely to be here. I'm really excited.
Why don't you guys tell us your voice so we know who is speaking here? I think that would help our listeners.
This is Tim.
Great.
And this is Joshua Kutchin. I'm here. Bigfoot is a goblin. We all know.
Great.
No, this is Josh.
Bigfoot is a goblin. That might have to be the name of this episode.
Yeah, dude, that's a perfect name. Talk about kicking things off.
Clearly, just going over the bios here, you guys are kind of like us. You're sort of Renaissance men. You dabble in many different art forms. I just wanted to talk. Let's kick this off by first, how did you guys find each other? And then we'll get into your background a little bit, how you got into this field. Because I can't imagine, after reading your book, or at least the first half in of volume one of Where the Footprints End, that we could have two better guests to really discuss the realm of high strangeness than the two of you.
Yeah.
So how did you guys find each other?
I can go with my meet cute first.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. So I remember distinctly I was trying to get my wristwatch fixed. Some December, I can't remember what Tim's first appearance on the Where Did the Road Go podcast was, but it was some December and it was crazy Christmas shopping, and I was trying to get my wristwatch fixed, and I look down at my iPod, and there's some guy who's doing local legend tripping in Pennsylvania, and I'm like, when you have looked at as much strangeness and Fortiana and oddities, you kind of want top shelf bourbon. And I'm looking at this podcast, I'm like, this is mouthwash. Do I really want to listen to this guy? And sure enough, I gave it a chance, and it was Tim doing some of the best damn legend tripping I have ever heard, and just being a real research pit bull. And I think that I wrote you about the entity that was seen at Chickie's Rock, Tim, looking like the Pascagoula alien. I think it was the first correspondence that we had.
Oh, wow.
God, I'm already have so. two questions. I'm already
excited. Yeah.
Boy, oh boy, I don't know how we're going to keep this under an hour and a half.
Well, the funny thing is, I didn't even realize that's how I met you. But like, as I'm remembering it, I had listened to you on that on Where Did the Road Go? And I said, hey, this sounds like this. And then from there, all sort of tumbled out, and we ended up, sharing space on a round table on Where Did the Road Go at some point. And I guess the rest was history. Unless Tim remembers differently.
No, that's pretty much it. I think I specifically heard you talking on Where Did the Road Go about more paranormal aspects of Bigfoot, specifically the sort of change in scope on Sasquatch Chronicles from the West being kind of making fun of the paranormal stuff to sort of accepting it. And I was doing a paranormal show on Strange Familiars, and I reached out to Soraya because I knew Soraya at this point. And I said, hey, can you put me in contact with this Josh guy? Because I want to have him on, my podcast to talk about weird Bigfoot stuff.
So I have a question, and this is probably exposing myself. I don't think I've heard the phrase legend tripping. What is that exactly?
It's generally... I don't know when it came into popular use, probably post-internet, but people have been doing it, obviously, since the 50s. It was like, let's go to Crybaby Bridge and see what happens there. Let's go, this house down this road is haunted. Let's go visit old house.
Okay, so I've done this. I just didn't know that's what it was called.
yeah, exactly.
And then what's the Chickie's Rock entity, because anything that looks like the carrot stick Pascagoula aliens, I want to hear more about.
Well, I think this is the first of many schisms that Tim and I had, because I don't think Tim felt that there was a comparison, but wasn't the Chickie's Rock entity, if memory serves, Tim, wasn't it described as a ghost that looked like a mummy with knives sticking out of its head?
Yes.
Yeah. Nice.
So...
And it was seen once in the, I want to say the 40s or the 50s. A woman and her workmates were going. Chickie's Rock is a popular park in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, right along the Susquehanna River. And she and her workmates were going there to eat lunch, I believe, on a break from work. They worked nearby, and they saw this entity. And she described it to somebody who was writing a book on Lancaster County ghost stories. Well, years later, there was this kind of ghost mania in the late 60s. In Chickie's Rock, somebody reported seeing a ghost up there, and then people were going up every night. They had to have police up there to direct traffic. There were so many people going up just looking for these ghosts. And without any knowledge of this woman, this later and her encounter, which appeared in a ghost book, many years later, and this is in the 60s, before her account ever appeared anywhere else. This teenager was up there at some point and describes this basically this exact same entity, this giant mummy with knives sticking out of its head.
Whoa.
Wow. That's wild. Wow. And so how does that compare to the head?
I'm sorry. I just need to know, were the knives stabbed in its head or coming out of its head like Wolverine's claws?
Never clear. I've tried to get clarification on that. When I drew it for my first book, I put the knives sticking in with the handles out, but who knows? Yeah.
That's pretty metal either way. How in your mind did that compare to the Pascagoula alien abduction? I mean, because that creature sort of had these lobster claws, if I remember.
Yeah, but it had these sort of protrusions that were sticking out.
At
least 3 points on the head, and they described the skin as kind of being elephantine or like a mummy. So I was like, hey, is this a little bit of a connection there? Mm. And Tim said no, so that was our first disagreement.
I have no recollection of this, Josh. None. Like, literally zero recollection of this.
I think I have a blog post on my website, so I'll have to dig it up and send it to you.
So where did you guys share a common intersection on the world of Bigfoot? I mean, did you guys start talking about that immediately? And where were your philosophies and ideologies on the subject when you first met? And have they changed since writing these books?
Oh, that's a big question. So I was on Where Did the Road Go with Josh, and I was telling some stories about some encounters I had in the woods with what seemed to me, that, by all accounts, to be like Class B kind of Bigfoot experiences. Something moving rocks around, bad smell, sounds of wood knocks, and like terrible, terrible, frightening fear. Bad smells?
Anyway. Yeah.
Yep. Smells. And really expected to actually see a creature the day this happened. And I'm describing this experience, and I get done and basically said, so that's my Bigfoot experience. And either Josh or Soraya, the host, or both of them, I forget which, said to me, like, well, hold on a minute. If those same things you described, all of that would have happened inside a house, you would have said that's a poltergeist encounter. You would not have said Bigfoot at all. And I describe this as my sort of enlightenment moment, because I read these stories about like Zen monks being slapped up beside the head, and they reach enlightenment in an instant, and that's what it was like for me. It was like being hit upside the head with a 2x4, because right there I went, oh, they're right. Like, I didn't see a creature. I don't know what it was, I dipped my toes in the weird Bigfoot stuff from the very beginning. But my general approach, I think, up until that point was it's probably an undiscovered something. But that was really literally a world changing moment for me when I just realized that when they said it, and it rang so true. I just went, oh my goodness. In my head, I'm thinking, oh, they're right. I don't know what it was.
Wow.
That was sort of opening me up to more, strangeness as regards the phenomenon. And I think
Go ahead.
Josh and I just stayed in contact from there. Eventually I asked him to help me write these books, but Josh can take it from his point of view.
So I grew up as, you know, sort of a monster kid, just loving any sort of creature feature. Those were my go-to things. And of all the things that I was interested in, I was mostly interested in Bigfoot in terms of, you know, unexplained phenomena. Because, you know, of course it's just an undiscovered hominid. It was the easiest and most palatable, I thought. You know, after a while, in sort of what I like to do with my research is sort of looking at things that, you know, looking at either things that people will talk about in a paragraph of a book, but have never really expanded out to a full-fledged book, or, you know, something that really sort of shakes things up and makes people think about these things sort of an interdisciplinary and interconnected way. So, you know, as time went on, I became a little bit more, much to my own personal chagrin, sympathetic to the idea that Bigfoot might very well not be just an undiscovered ape. And, you know, I think a lot of my work, at least, is sort of always a challenge to myself to sort of put my money where my mouth is, or for me to really, you know, take a look at a topic that I've kind of been uncomfortable with for a long time. And, you know, paranormal, for lack of a better term, Bigfoot has been something that I've always kind of had a little bit of a hard time with. But once you start, you know, once you start peeling away at it a little bit, the whole outer shell just sloughs off and you're looking at this, you know, weird wild man archetype that's roaming the woods. So I remember it was in September of 2018. I had just finished my book, Thieves in the Night, on supernatural child abductions, and I was sort of Well, Tim puts it really well, because Tim says that, you know, once you finish a book, you kind of have got this afterglow, but you kind of got this emptiness at the same time, where you're like, well, what do I do now? I've been, you know, working on this for so long, and now it's out. But I was planning on sort of not writing as much because I had twin boys on the way. But I'm at the beach, and Tim writes me or texts me and says, hey, let's do a book on Weird Bigfoot. And from then I signed on, because I was like, yeah, let's just go ahead and do it. I'd never co-authored a book with anyone. And so this was a good opportunity to do that. And, you know, I wouldn't partner up with just anyone. But between Tim's writing style and the way that he is just absolutely a beast when it comes to research, I said, this is someone who I'm, you know, willing to associate with, so to speak. I think the project turned out a little bit different than Tim's original vision, though.
Mm. How so?
I think if I would have done it alone, and I'll say from the outset, Josh was right. And Josh was right in the way to approach it. I'm glad it took the format it did in the end. But if I had done it alone, it probably would have been more like an encyclopedia. Like you get these, you know, the encyclopedia of Bigfoot or whatever, you gotcha. Know, A is for astral projection, B is for whatever, that's, you know, and I probably would have done it like that. This way I think is much more impactful, and Josh was right. I didn't fight him much on it. I think Josh said, look, if we're going to do it, I want to do it like this. And I thought about it for a bit, and I'm like, okay, let's do it like that. And like I said, in the end, he was absolutely right in this approach.
I love the format of the book. For our listeners who haven't checked out, Volume 2 is recently out, and we haven't actually read that yet, but we'll definitely check that out. The book is sort of set up 8 chapters, and the 8 chapters almost read as their own. You could almost read any of those on their own. You know, they obviously feed into one another, but it's almost like 8 essays, you know, on a certain aspect of Bigfoot and high strangeness. And I thought that your guys' writing styles really complemented one another really well. There were a couple times I'd have to flip back and go, okay, who's writing this, Josh or Tim? You know, so I thought it came together really, really great.
Well, we didn't really know how to write a book with someone else either of us. You know, I think about, you know, writing duos that I've had in the past, and there really hasn't been a byline by a specific chapter or anything. They've all sort of melded together. But I think sort of allowing these different topics to sort of nest in our areas of expertise or our areas of passion, as it were, was a really good idea. And I think probably the reason that there seems to be such a good flow in between is because, even though, you know, I wrote chapter X and Tim wrote chapter Y, there was a lot of us saying, hey, did you know about this? Hey, have you looked into this? Hey, have you thought about it this way? And that just sort of ended up getting a little bit mushed together. But I thank you. I think it turned out well for it's the only way that I think we could have written it, actually.
Yeah, most definitely. I want to speak to just a couple of things you both said. I mean, first you, Timothy, that if I had to distill sort of the one germ of truth that when I'm talking to somebody about this book, I'm like, you know, I explain it like this. You know, I love the idea of the wildness geist, right? And I can totally see why that was an aha moment, because I can tell somebody who doesn't know anything about strange Bigfoot, and I can give them that sort of that primer explanation. You know how a poltergeist in a house is knocking on doors and discarnate voices and sometimes visible specters, and just imagine that outdoors, and then they go, oh, so it's such an easy way. And it's usually those things where you can find the most truth. Like you said, it beats you over the head with a 2x4. And I just loved the idea of that. And then Josh, to speak on what you were saying, I think that drives at the heart of what we love about high strangeness is finding these details that people like to leave out or like to not talk about because they don't sort of fit into how they want to tell the story. And I think, you know, for me personally, and I know Mike as well, it's like that's where the fun stuff is, right? Because I think in exploring those ideas, you're going to get closer to the truth. Just to give an example of what we're talking about, you know, the Ape Canyon thing, the Fred Beck story. You know, and I heard you guys talk about this. So many people don't realize that, you know, Fred Beck was sort of a spiritualist at heart, and he saw a specter and a woman sort of point him away to his gold mine. And so there's so much more side of the story that nobody talks about when they talk about that incident. But Why is it these strange details, often containing paradox, that is going to help us get closer to the truth of what's really taking place in the world?
Well, you know, I suspect that the real value and the real strength in a lot of these unexplained topics lies in its consistency rather than, you know, the veracity of any single account. Mm. The fact that you have somebody, you know, like Fred Beck, who's talking about stuff that would have made complete sense to someone in the Theosophical Society in London, right. You know, 30 or 40 years later, or earlier, or whatever, I think is really interesting, because it does point to the possibility, or even dare I say probability, that there is some sort of objective external reality to these things. Tim, you got anything to sort of piggyback on that?
Yeah, I mean, we talk a lot about weird washing, which is done so often in, especially in Bigfoot. There's so many stories where there's weird details and other things happen, and these cryptozoologists are so eager to prove this to, you know, quote unquote mainstream science, that they just, well, we'll just leave that out. We're not going to talk about UFOs. We're not going to talk about orbs. We're just going to talk about this ape man.
Yeah.
And to me, Ape Canyon was the single best example of that, because this is a story I've heard my entire life. I've been interested in Bigfoot my entire life. I've read all these books. I read, you know, about Ape Canyon in I don't know how many, you know, books about Bigfoot, just sort of, you know, overviews of the phenomenon or whatever. I'd heard the story on I don't know how many radio shows and podcasts. And never until I read Fred Beck's own account, and he was there, did I get any hint of all this weird stuff that was going on there. And it's the single, you know, best example of this weird washing phenomenon, of which there is no shortage of other examples.
I'm trying to remember if we left it out when we covered Ape Canyon on our podcast.
I think you talked about it, Mike. Yeah, you definitely mentioned it. Yeah.
Because I found that in the research. And sometimes, too, I think it's, you know, it just comes down to time. Like, how do I crystallize this, you know, the cliff notes of this story? But, you know, I think that's a great example. I love that term, weird washing. You know, the other example that immediately comes to my mind is all the weird shit that happened to Betty and Barney Hill after their alien abduction, all the poltergeist activity they had, and all the poltergeist activity that abductees like Debbie Jordan Cobble, you know, the Copley Woods incident that she experienced, you know, seeing orbs like fly in through the television, you know, like months or even years after her abduction experiences, or seeing this image of a little girl, the specter of a little girl that might have been her alien human hybrid child, you know, showing up.
And that was just post Barney and Betty. She had prophetic and psychic dreams before the abduction ever took place.
Yes, too. Exactly. Yeah. I'm skipping in and out of two different abductee stories.
Sure.
But Betty had stuff her whole life. So how much have you guys found in the Bigfoot area that witnesses who have encountered, you know, a Sasquatch or a big hairy monster, whatever you want to call it, have had a predilection for psychic activity in their lives leading up to that?
Oh, I mean, so I'm the local Bigfoot guy. If somebody sees Bigfoot in York County, I'm usually the guy that gets the call. So I talk to a ton of witnesses, and it's talking to these witnesses, like to take the woman in white chapter in volume one as an example. That was the thing that really convinced me that like, yes, this is a thing, because the number of witnesses I talked to. So I do the normal Bigfoot stuff. I look for prints. I go, you know, how tall was it? You know, where was it standing? This, you know, what was the weather like when you saw it? Blah, 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 et cetera. And, I'm lucky enough where this is my job. So if somebody sees Bigfoot, you know, in York County, I can be there the next day usually and talk to them. So a lot of this time I'm getting this information fresh, but after they're done talking, I never interrupt the Bigfoot story. Let me get the Bigfoot story. Whenever they're done, one of the questions I ask is, okay, what else weird is going on around here? There's several follow-up questions I ask, but that's one of them. The number of witnesses who tell me, oh, well, my house is also haunted. you know, I have poltergeist activity in my house, or, you know, I also saw this ghostly figure here, or I've seen UFOs, is, I mean, if it's not 100%, it's darn close, you know. It's incredible. And that's what really started me, you know, this woman in white thing, the number of witnesses who told me, like, oh yeah, I saw a ghost. It was this woman in a white dress who walked in my driveway, whatever it was. It's just been incredible. So it's, you know, I think the consensus in the past was that repeat witnesses barely ever happen. This stuff is odd enough as it is, et cetera, et cetera. And I kind of think it's almost the opposite now. It's very unusual for me to run into anybody that has just experienced one thing. And this is borne out on my own podcast as well. The number of witnesses I talk to that, you know, they'll say, hey, I saw Bigfoot, but, you know, during the course of the interview, they say, well, let me tell you these 10 other things that happened to me or whatever it is, you know?
Yeah.
I think we can relate to that, you know, like definitely. Bryce and I have both, you know, I've seen what I would call UFOs. I've seen what I call a ghost, and I've seen what I might consider to be an alien gray or something looking like an alien gray.
Yeah.
So, you know, like now that there are decades in between those encounters, but which makes me just worried what's coming down the pipeline in another decade. But can you just elaborate a little bit more on the woman in white thing, just because that's something we haven't really talked on the main show about, which I found fascinating in the book.
Okay, so I'm going to jump in here with my usual self-deprecating disclaimer, and Tim knows exactly what it's going to be. But when Tim came to me with this woman in white connection, he goes, have you ever noticed that people who see cryptids sometimes see a woman in white in close proximity, and, you know, time or the area? And I said, Tim, I don't know what you're talking about, but there is absolutely nothing to this. And you know, flash forward about a year later, and it's the best damn chapter in the book. So Tim, take it away.
Wow. Well, for me, what got my attention, there was these two folks on Sasquatch Chronicles, these two brothers that were telling their story, and saw a bunch of creatures, et cetera, around their houses, had the typical, you know, around the house experience where they're climbing on their roof and knocking on their walls and et cetera, et cetera. Wes, the host, some months later does an update, maybe a month or two later. And he says, I talked to these guys again and they told me all this weird stuff, including that they're seeing this old woman walk around their neighborhood, this very hag-like woman who wears white and she has these shoes that are too big for her feet. And, you know, tells this whole very, very strange story as regards this other entity, this woman in white that they're seeing, who they assumed at first was just like a homeless woman or something. Very, very interesting to me, these sort of other things. And then I was on like the forum, I think the Sasquatch Chronicles forum, and a bunch of other people were on there saying, you know what? I saw this weird woman wearing white, and then I drove down the road and saw Bigfoot. You know, and people started chiming in with these other encounters. So I follow this kind of stuff in the back of my head. I've like, you know, nerd memory for this stuff. I'm like, this is of use at some point. I'll put this away. And then, again, I started, you know, local witnesses started telling me about it. There's a fellow who saw two Bigfoot on his property, and I went to see him. This is one of the ones where I got there within days of him seeing it. Probably, I think either the next day or 2 days following, and did all the normal stuff. And I mean, this is so difficult to talk about the paranormal in general. I always tell people it's a spider web. It's not linear. It's not just one line. So when you talk about one thing, you really have to talk about 10 other things. This was right in the middle of another strange group of events that happened, where I started finding skulls on 80%, if not more, of the Bigfoot investigations I went on. Nice, clean skulls, most often deer skull, but
other... Okay, I was gonna say human.
No,
so casually, yeah,
not yet. But when that day comes, who knows what happens?
Yeah,
but
we got a problem.
But this is one of the places where I found a perfectly clear deer skull. When the guy told me the creatures were standing across a pond on his property, I went over there. I'm holding up my walking stick, you know, how high were they, all this stuff. And, you know, he told me exactly where they were standing. He wouldn't come across the pond. He was standing over by his house where he saw him. He didn't want to go over there. But anyway, when we were done all this, I looked down, there's a perfectly clean deer skull at my feet, right where the creatures were standing. In any case, I talk to him and he starts telling me, you know, done the Bigfoot stuff. Okay, what else is weird here? He starts telling me about all this ghost activity and poltergeist activity he's having around his house and orbs, and starts showing me some really, really interesting pictures of ghosts that he took, some of which he said there were biker ghosts around his place. That's how he described them.
Awesome.
Well, he showed me the pictures, and to me, they look like Bigfoot. They didn't look like bikers at all. He's calling them bikers because they're big, hairy things. And he's saying that the big eyes were sunglasses. Well, I'm seeing just, you know, big old Sasquatch eyes.
Now I'm seeing Bigfoot in like leather chaps and a bandana and Oakleys, yeah. And it's going to be hard to get that image out of my head.
Just firing up his hog and hitting the open road.
He'd definitely be one of the baddest guys in the gang. But no, they're like very kind of smoky, ghosty, you know, ephemeral ghost-like figures, but they look like, you know, Bigfoot faces to me. These things that he's calling bikers. But anyway, he says, well, I have this other picture of this ghost I took in the mirror, and he shows me, and it's a woman in a white dress, plain as can be. Some of these other ones were very kind of ephemeral and smoky in your typical kind of ghost shots. This was a, you know, very clear shot of a woman in a white dress. And I went, wow. Like, so he didn't even, I didn't ask about women in white, and I try not to ask outright about it. Other witnesses, you know, like I said, the one guy saw, he had all these Bigfoot type accounts going on around his house, saw a spirit in white walk up his driveway. I met another witness in Michaux State Forest in Pennsylvania, who less than a mile away from his encounter, he took me to a place called Pond Bank, and Pond Bank has this legend called the White Lady of Pond Bank, who supposedly drowned her child in the pond. The town is named after the actual pond there. And this was, again, less than a mile away, probably three quarters of a mile away from his very, very intense encounter he had on the mountain there. So I started thinking, well, this is a thing. This is like, I'm not making this up at this point. This is too much. And started doing research for it, for the book. And I'm finding little bits here and there. And I'm not really making the connection with the wild man necessarily. So I just started looking up these women in white apparitions. And there are some very famous ones in Austria. The royal families would, they would see these women in white figures, and they took them as signs of impending death, kind of like a banshee. So right. If a family saw this woman in white, you know, like somebody in the royal family was going to die. And they named one of them. They said that her name was Ursula, which happens to be my daughter's name, by the way. But and they said that this was connected to the medieval form of Perchta, which yeah. was this
we
other...
just talked about that
yeah we just covered Perchta on I gotta say, there was like a lot of like reading your book, I was like, oh my god, we are talking about all of this stuff right now on the podcast. There's yeah. been a lot or on our Patreon, there's a lot of like synchronicities. Yeah, so we just talked about, we did a whole episode on Perchta on the other side.
Yeah, so Perchta is this woman in white. She can appear as an old hag or a young woman. You've probably went over all this stuff. But she has this retinue that follows her around, and is composed of two different things. One is the Heimchen, which were the souls of the dead children that she led off into the woods. And those took the form of like will-o'-the-wisp lights, like orbs. Wow. And the other part of her retinue was called the Perchten. And these were wild men. This was a group of
the
hairy
Krampus
wild men.
Kind of Krampus style.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Beastie guys.
Yep. And that opened it up for me. It was from that point. I just went, yep, this is a thing. And then I started finding all of these different folkloric wild men all over the world. And they're often, they'll say their wife or their counterpart or their helper is this woman in white. There's the apple tree man in England is a sort of a wild man of the orchard. And he has an old woman in white that helps him guard the orchard. There's the Sasa Bansum, I think, is in Apollonia. And that he was called the friend of witches, and he had his counterpart was this white ghostly kind of figure. The Russian Leshy, I think it's called, his counterpart. He's a wild man of the woods. His counterpart's this woman in white. So it starts appearing everywhere. I haven't found one in Asia yet, to my knowledge. But
this is reminiscent of reading the book reference after reference. I mean, obviously you guys know this stuff so well and have done your homework. That's amazing. I mean, it got just going through the bibliography of this book is so incredible too. It made me want to, you know, have you guys send me a picture of your bookshelves just to see what we're looking at. How much of that takes place into your read? I mean, you know, where do you guys get most of your stuff? I know what I loved about it too, is like you guys pulled from podcasts and radio shows and it really made for a diverse and inclusive bibliography. But, can you guys tell me a little bit about, well, actually, you know, before I ask that question, this is totally switching gears. Josh, I wanted
excited to see where this goes, Bryce.
Oh yeah. Well, we can pick back up on it. I wanted to ask Joshua Cutchin a question before I forget it, you know? And this kind of has to do with gift offering and the fae. And we were sort of joking about last time on the show, if Michael could, you know, left some offering out on the balcony of his apartment, what might come by? And can you talk a little bit about gift offering between and the similarities between Bigfoot and fae and maybe even speculate what would happen if we left an offering in a city environment? Would we get an alien? Would we get a Bigfoot? Or how does that work? That's a big fucking question.
Wow, you're all over the map today, Bryce.
I got to get it in my hour now. There's so much rattling in my mind.
Well, the answer is yes. all the above. No, I am struck by the number of accounts. There's the Fairy Investigation Society has been kept alive by a scholar friend of mine, and every several years he puts together a fairy census, and you can actually look up the fairy census. I think 2014 was the last one. He's getting ready to release a new one. It's, you know, accounts from people in the current day and age, and I'm always struck whenever I look through it by the number of people who see a fairy in a garden in a metropolitan area. You know, it's just the tiniest little sliver of land. I think you mentioned the quote last time from a former Sorbonne historian of medieval history, Claude Lecouteux, who described the forest as sort of a conservatory of paganism. And it really does seem like, literally, if you've got, you know, a 3x3 patch of grass, there can be some sort of elemental spirit or nature spirit of genus loci there. Sometimes you'll see in documentaries especially in, I'm thinking Scandinavia, where they'll actually, you know, they'll divert an entire road project around a fairy tree or a fairy boulder or something, and you know, the metropolis will build up around it. And wow, it's still standing there, and nobody, you know, everybody has a real respect for it. That's especially common in Iceland. But, you know, as far as what you get or what to expect, the headspace that I'm in right now is having a really difficult time differentiating fairies and, you know, what we call extraterrestrials and, honestly, the dead and spirits and all these things.
That's so funny you mentioned that, Josh, because, you know, our listeners know this well. I won't go into too much detail, but what I considered to resemble an alien gray that was looking at my window in the middle of the night and woke myself up and my dog, who saw it and started barking, it was standing, you know, I live in here in Hollywood, and we, you know, it's the Hollywood Hills, so there's some greenery around, but it was literally standing in like a 3x3 patch of earth. That's like the only little bit of earth I have next to my apartment. So I hadn't thought about that before. But I did definitely have this idea, and the boys know this and our listeners know, you know, my gut has always told me, I don't feel like I saw an alien. I feel like I saw something that was more akin to like a leprechaun, like something that like was passing through, that's part that is sort of terrestrial in a way, but I wasn't supposed to see it, you know? And when it became aware of me, it ran off. It vanished, basically.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I'm at the point, especially with the fairy alien thing, that I think that they're both describing the exact same phenomena. They're just approaching it from different cultural perspectives. And I have receipts for that. So if anybody wants to come after me for that, I can defend that position. Right. But, you know, it's interesting. You look at leaving out offerings for Santa Claus, leaving out offerings for, you know, the ancestral dead, leaving out offerings for the Wild Hunt, you know, the host of the spectral army that flies through the sky with Odin at the front of it, leaving out full meals for, you know, Mary and Joseph and baby Jesus at Christmas.
As well, you got to leave porridge out for Perkta.
Yeah, so it's I think it really is all sort of describing the same phenomena as you know, as far as what would happen. I'm not going to give too much away because I don't want to steal Soraya's thunder, but I have in an upcoming episode of Where Did the Road Go, a description with, you know, lo and behold, something actually happened to me. It sounds like it might have been a little bit of poltergeisty kind of house spirit phenomena that after being told in a dream to offer black licorice, Tim's like, what? I haven't heard about this yet.
Oh, wow.
after being told in a dream to put out an offering of black licorice, it completely stopped. Wow. So I, you know, I think there's a sense of supplication for these things. As far as what actually happens to the food, you know, you'd be hard pressed to find someone who's like, I put out porridge, and when I woke up the next morning, the porridge was all drunk. You know, or it doesn't really work that way. Doesn't work that way in magical practice. Doesn't work that way when making, you know, offerings. If you have an ancestor altar or something, doesn't work that way either. But the one thing that everybody agrees on is that you toss it out. You take it back to Earth or find some other way to, you know, sort of naturally dispose of it. The last thing you want to do is to eat it. There are tales from Ireland of, you know, leaving out milk for the fairy folk or, you know, in Cornwall, leaving out milk and bread for the pixies, and a cat coming along the next day and drinking it and the cat getting sick. So the general idea is that there's some sort of metaphysical essence that's in the food.
Dad's taken out. This is a warning to dads across the world that, you know, leave that plate of Santa cookies alone.
Well, and of course, you know, and I'm completely sympathetic to the skeptical interpretation that, like, well, that's really convenient. Nothing happened to it. So, it's the essence of the food.
I guess I fuck up every Christmas. I'm always eating the cookies and drinking the milk. I'm like, oh, shit. No,
that's for Santa. Yeah, right? I mean, I would add to what Josh said, just, like, to me, gifting is such an efficient way to interact with the other, whatever it may be, that I wouldn't put it on my balcony. I'd go somewhere else and do it.
Wow. Don't bring that shit home. That's interesting.
Yeah, so Tim had an interesting little interaction with was a little bottle of wine in a stump, right, Tim?
Yeah, it's part of a huge story.
Well, let's talk about that in the second half of the show. We do need to take a quick break, but before we do that, I want to ask you guys, you know, you both mentioned you were monster boys. You were into Bigfoot growing up. When was the moment where you guys went from being casual fans of these stories into like, oh, now it's my job? Do you remember the moment that you transitioned into that point?
Josh?
Well, for me, I mean, it was, so I wrote my first book, A Trojan Feast, during the summer while having a desk job at the University of Georgia. But it was the sort of thing that I realized pretty quickly after leaving that job and applying for other jobs that I was getting through the job application process, and it was getting to a certain point where they're like, hey, maybe we should Google this guy. And they start seeing that my name's attached to all this crazy shit. So, you know, you kind of have a moment there where you're like, well, I'm kind of, you know, sullied by this already. I might as well double down on it. So I guess sometime around 2015 or so, but you know, thankfully, you know, I'm able to still freelance as a musician and teach lessons and that sort of thing. It's interesting, the UFO folks are like, what's the tuba about? And all my musician friends are like, what's this UFO shit about? I'm always the most interesting person at parties, guys.
I'm sure Riley can relate to that.
Yeah, definitely. You just got to start leaning into it at some point.
How about you, Timothy? When did it crystallize for you that this stuff is more than just an interest?
So my first book was, it started out, it was going to be sort of a magazine article. It wasn't going to be a book. And as I'm getting into it, at some point I'm like, this is a book. This is too much for an article. And probably right around then when I realized, like, okay, I'm going to make a run at this. And thankfully, you know, things have worked out well in that department. So, yeah, I guess at that point I was like, so now it's my job.
You know, I just have a follow-up question. And you know, I know this stuff is important to us, but why is it important for everyone else too? And you know, I think we can consider you guys artists. You're both musicians, incredible writers and illustrators. But, you know, what role does the artist play in sort of revealing the liminal for everyone else?
Go ahead. Go ahead, Josh. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I'm a big proponent of the Jungian idea that people don't have ideas. Ideas have people.
Mm.
And I think if you really embark on any sort of a big project, even something that's, you know, writing a speculative nonfiction book, you're going to find that you are pushed around into creating more than you're actually creating yourself. Wow. It's just going to be like, this is just where this project goes. And I think that's, for a lot of people, possibly a toehold into deconstructing, you know, scientific physicalism, scientific materialism, which I am a long-standing critic of. And I think that if people can learn to adopt other philosophies besides that, it actually might lead to a little bit more prosperity in terms of personal relationships than we have right now in the world. So that's sort of the giant, you know, 10,000 foot view picture of why I do a lot of this.
Yeah. How about you, Timothy? Why is the strange important?
This is tied into our lives. Josh and I both do a lot of comparative folklore. I think it's one of the reasons we work so well together. We both love folklore from all over the world, and we like finding the commonalities in these different things. And, you know, these, in my mind, these were our ancestors telling us how they relate to the world in all these folk stories. Now, some of them are very, very mundane. You know, this plant will kill you, that plant will heal you, you know. But as regards this weird stuff, you know, it's kind of our ancestors telling us, like, hey, we saw this weird stuff. This is how we dealt with it. These are the rules, so to speak. This is what we found has worked and what hasn't in dealing with these things. So it's part of the human experience. And my entire life as an artist, I mean, I've always done, you know, quote unquote, supernatural art, and my music has always been about that in one form or another. So it's kind of where I've lived myself. It's just my interest, but it's part of humanity. It's, I mean, it's the same, you know, some people write love songs and those are extremely important. But you know, my part in this world, I think, is kind of messing with this supernatural, this weirdo paranormal stuff and seeing how it fits in with our lives. So I think it's part of the human experience, short answer.
Wow.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more High Strangeness and Bigfoot with Josh and Tim.
In the night, but yeah, people in the night too. And
man, I saw the dark, and the dark sought me.
But it was weird. I was like, I felt very comfortable. Like, yeah, and it's just like you seek out these like really dark, like normally these dark corners in my backyard. I'm like, that's a little creepy, but it was like during those few days, I was like, I would go hang out in those corners and like maybe smoke a bowl or something. But it was fucking weird, man.
Very brief goth phase.
Yeah. That was probably just a goth phase. You're right.
Well, now, Bryce, welcome back, listeners. We're talking to Josh McCutcheon and Timothy Renner about the darkness and being scared of the dark, which we were chatting during the break. But Bryce, now you're out in the woods. You're doing this for Expedition Bigfoot. And so, you know, and it seems, you know, only two episodes in that you're out there with something. So what's your relationship to the darkness and the woods now?
Yeah, no, totally. So I was just telling the fellas about, you know, a few years back, I was slammed into what I can only describe by a mystical state. And I sought out the darkness, right? Like I really liked being in dark corners and just being in the dark. But yeah, it's, there's a relation. And so now, and I was always sort of afraid of the dark too. But now it's like, I really, there's a relationship that's been able to, fuse together, right? Like, you know, being a person who's not seeking out the dark, but then knowing that, like, you know, if you want to find sort of strange things, then the dark has to be a part of it, you know?
Bryce, you've never mentioned this on the show. Is this that thing that you didn't want to tell us about a couple years ago?
Sort of, and then, but not really, right? Like, I've got a few little things, but yeah, that was one of them, right? It was a really strange.
Wow, guys, this BCC listeners, this is a long standing secret plot thread mystery to the show.
The Tales of Shadow, Bryce.
Yeah, well, it really was. It was really like experiencing a shadow world, right? And it was just a place where you could. Where information came faster, you know?
Interesting.
And it felt like verifiable. It felt like verifiable information. You're like, man, what I'm experiencing right now feels true.
I don't want to ignore our guests here, and please, I encourage them to ask questions. But what information were you getting as Shadow Bryce? Like, what were you experiencing?
Oh my gosh! Just like, for lack of a better term, just like secrets of the universe. You know what I mean? You'd be like, you would feel like you had this relationship with chaos, right? As opposed to order. And you got to see sort of this really divineness about chaos and the darkness and the dark recesses and the unknown, you know, it was like a real place to explore ideas about, you know, just strange shit, like about who we are and you know what's real. It was a weird time.
Is this why you stopped smoking pot?
That you no, know, my wife made me stop smoking pot. But
is it because you were facing the chaos behind your children's playhouse in the backyard? You know, it
probably didn't help, but yeah, very very crazy, very crazy.
I mean, he's an endless. Well, he's a bottomless well of fascination, Bryce Johnson. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I look forward to hearing more about this in 2021. Tim, you mentioned, or I think Josh, you actually mentioned the story about Tim offering a bottle of wine on a tree stump to, I'm going to assume, Bigfoot. What's this story?
Well, I didn't know what it was at this point. This all started out with what I mentioned previously. It's in a local park, which is known locally as Hex Hollow, because there was a very famous murder that occurred there that they called a hex murder. It had to do with supposed witchcraft. It wasn't really, but supposed witchcraft and stuff.
No, it was just an abusive man. Well, an evil murderer. It has nothing to do with witchcraft.
More of a faith healer. It's a local sort of faith healing practice. It doesn't involve like sympathetic magic and so forth, but the guy wasn't a witch. But in any case, this place is called Hex Hollow, and I had originally, boy, this is a spider web. So sorry if it doesn't, it's a little hard to tell linearly.
Yeah, sorry I opened Pandora's box on this.
I love that analogy, by the way, though, the spider web analogy for the paranormal. It's such a good way of...
There's no other way, because you try to tell it linearly and you're like, well, but wait, this relates to something that happened like over here and you know, 2 months previously, but I didn't realize it until 3 months later. And then I put it on. But I found this cairn, this stack of white quartz, and rearranged it. And over the course of the better part of a year, started this, you know, my wife called it the game of chess, where I, every time I would go to this, and this is the closest park to my house. It's not wilderness. It's a rural area, but it's not, you know, wilderness is untouched land. This is, you know, people are here. So it was odd to me. And every time I would come and I started going like two, sometimes three times a week, it would be changed. And I would change it and be changed when I saw it again. So this, you know, takes place. And then I had that scary event I was talking about where I heard wood knocks, what I assume was wood knocks. And then I was walking up to this area and then like a whole murder of crows went nuts and flew over my head and went up there on this particular day, heard another sound that sounded like, I heard a rock clack, and then I heard a wood knock sound when I got up to the area. It sounded from the opposite direction, what I thought was a wood knock. Then I was hit by this smell, this horrible smell. Then this fear took over my body, this intense fear. And I wanted to run. I wanted to run so bad, and I couldn't because my knees were locked up. The only thing I could do was lean on my walking stick. And it was at that point I thought, well, here comes your sighting. You know, I've read enough Bigfoot accounts and heard enough where, like, you know, you're about to see something, buddy. Prepare yourself. And then I heard the sound like two or three little clicks, like sounded like little gears, like two little gears clicking together, like click, 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 from the direction where I heard that wood knock. And all of the fear went away, the smell went away, everything went away all at once. And I was able to sort of restock the rocks and go about my business. I found on the way out a trackway of what I call maybe footprints. They certainly mm-hmm. looked like footprints. There was a very light coating of snow. And these came off of a game trail across the main trail and then up into a cornfield where I couldn't follow them anymore because the ground was too broken up. But they certainly look like footprints, but I can't say. I think, you know, they weren't super distinct. In any case, kept doing this sort of rebuilding the cairn thing until one day I cut myself on the quartz. It's really sharp quartz rock. I cut myself on it. I bled all over the rocks, and I thought, oh boy, this is gonna be awesome. Like, it's gonna go nuts here now. And never changed again. That was the end of it. That wow. The blood ended it. There was no more after that. So, you know, maybe, I don't know, another month or so goes by, and I'm in a different part of the same park, and I'm off trail. So now there's, you know, this other thing was at a trailhead. It was easy to get to. I don't think it was people in the end because of all the other strangeness that accompanied it. But it, you know, if you want to say it was people, maybe it was people. But this is I found a stack of rocks, of boulders, really, in the crotch of a tree, off trail. This is completely off trail. You can't see it from the trail. You know, so you'd have to know it was there. And I thought, wow, this is really, really interesting. So I thought, I'm going to start adding to this. So I added rocks to that.
Oh, wow.
Every time I come back, they're cleaned off, completely cleaned off.
Whatever
rocks I put there, it's cleaned off to there's like a stack of three rocks in the crotch of this tree. Oh, man. So no matter what I do to it, it's completely cleaned off. And this is an aside, this comes much later, but I took a friend of mine there. He's like super strong guy, like ex-military, just a beast of a human being. And I'm telling him about it, and he's like, well, we'll see. And he picks up boulders. He puts up, like, I couldn't even lift these things if I tried. I'm a big guy. I'm over 6 foot tall and over 200 pounds. I'm a large fella. And there's no way I could put these things up. This guy's a beast. And he puts these, what I call boulders, on top of these. Next time I went, cleared off back to the original three rocks. So had to be somebody at least as strong as him clearing them off if it's a person. But in any case, I started leaving food offerings there, which, you know, probably shouldn't have done, but I did. And they often be gone, and you go, well, squirrel or raccoon or whatever, you know, who knows what's going on there. And then I got the bright idea to leave alcohol. And I had this little glass bottle with a little cork in it, and I filled it with wine. And there's a hole down below where these rocks are stacked in the crotch of this tree that, you know, someone with a smaller hand than mine could fit their hand in there. I couldn't. So I dropped it in there. And I asked out loud, and I'd asked out loud for other things in this park. After reading Mike Clellan's book, The Messengers, about owls, one day I had read in his book about people who, this woman who, every time she wanted to see an owl, she'd just say to the woods, I'd like to see an owl today. And then she'd go on her walk and she'd see an owl.
Wow.
I thought I'd try that, but I didn't want an owl. I wanted antlers. I wanted to find antlers. So I said, to the woods this day, I would like to see antlers today. This is, there's no offering involved. This is just me, like, just being crazy, getting out of my car, trying weird stuff. I go on my hike. I'm actually going up to the chessboard on this day, and I see something white in the tree off the trail, and I look, and I think it's somebody. A lot of times people leave their trash around. I thought it was a plastic bag, and I bop off the trail to, because I clean up. I'm weird. I feel like it's my responsibility to clean the trash up in the park because I use it so much. So I'm thinking, I'm angry. I'm thinking, like, I'm going to have to, you know, somebody's diaper they put in a bag, or maybe their dog excrement. You find that sometimes, or sometimes hunters will leave trash around. I'm sort of angry about it and trying to figure out who tied this bag up in a tree. And I get closer to it and I realize it's the entire tail section of a barn owl, bright white. And I had asked for antlers and I got an owl anyway that wow. day. It was really, really strange and very odd. And it was like I said, the whole tail section wasn't a single feather. In any case, back to this day, I leave the alcohol. So having had success before, I'd left the alcohol and I set out to the woods like a crazy person. I would like to find a skull today. And I walked from there about 100, 200 yards maybe into the middle of this field. And there's this circle of trees that I'd never been in before. I'd hiked this park hundreds, if not 1,000 times before. And I'd never been in these trees. I thought, wow, that's neat. I'm going to go over there. And it's almost a perfect circle of trees in the middle of this field. I walk into the trees and there's a large stone mound in the middle of the trees. And you know, I've referred to this as a fairy fort, and Josh spanked me and said, I'm not allowed to call it a fairy fort because we don't have fairy forts in America. Mm. But were this in Ireland, it would be a fairy fort.
Like we do now.
Yeah. And so I said, oh, I'm going to climb to the top of this and look around. And as I'm going up this large mound of stones, I start seeing little bits of fur and then blood. And then I get to a freshly decapitated groundhog head. I had the jaw ripped from it.
Whoa.
And it's at this point I realize I asked for a skull and I got a skull. Now, my hope was a nice clean one because I don't like gore. I'm not a fan of gore. I like these nice clean, you know, I'm an artist. I like to draw skulls. I've been collecting my entire life. I wanted a nice clean sun-bleached skull. That is not what I got. This was a gory, freshly ripped off groundhog head. The jaw had been ripped from the other part of the head. It's all laying there and no body. There's no body of the groundhog. It's just the head. And it hits me. I asked for a skull 10 minutes ago and I got a skull, and I got this really oppressive feeling, just this really just oppressive feeling. And I backed out of this circle of trees. I'm literally backing out of it, like keeping my eye on it and sort of walking half backwards, you know, and as I keep looking at him, I'm completely stunned at this point. And I back my way out of the field in the opposite direction from which I came, and I stopped and I realized where I was that I was at my first chessboard, that first place I was, doing the exchanges for. And, where this circle of trees was at least where it sounded like I heard that would not come from that day way back when. And, it was just this really, really oppressive, really sickening feeling. It wasn't a good feeling at all. I didn't like it. And I came there maybe – I stopped going there so much because it was just – like I said, it wasn't a pleasant feeling at all. But I did hike there again a couple more times, and I would check for that wine bottle. And the next time I went, it was gone. And the time I came back after that, it was there. I could see it in the hole. I couldn't reach it. And then every time since I've looked for it, it's not been in there. It's not been in the hole. So maybe I went two other times after that, probably the third time after coming, after finding the groundhog skull, which I did not take, which is a big no-no. You don't ask for things when you're doing this. This is according to folklore. If you do ask for something and it's given to you, our ancestors say, make damn sure you take it, because you're going to offend them if you don't. And so this is on me. I made the mistake. So I was doing a podcast. I was doing Okay Talk the night before the last time I went. Well, not the last. I've been there several times since, but as far as the story goes. And we were talking about several things in the course of this podcast. One of them was just a folk story, how to catch raccoons. You put something shiny in a bottle and the raccoon will reach in, but it can't pull it out. You know, if you put coins or something in an old jug, and you'll find him in the morning with his hand holding the shiny thing. And, you know, that's how you catch raccoons. It's an old folk kind of country folk story. And then we talked about how when you mess with this stuff, when you mess with the other, it's like putting on the One Ring from Lord of the Rings, and it's like the great Eye of Sauron turns and looks at you, you know, when you start messing with this. And finally, we talked about the Small Town Monsters films, which are directed by Seth Breedlove, and we actually mentioned Breedlove by name. So I go with my son this day. In fact, I got off the phone with the guy from OK Talk, Clint, because I promised my son we'd go hiking the next day. So I was like, look, I got to cut this off because, you know, I told my son we'd go for a hike. So following day is rainy, but, you know, it was a warm day. We decided to go anyway, and we go on this hike, and we parked at the parking lot. That's actually called the Crossroads parking lot. It's at a crossroads. The story starts at a crossroads as far as that day goes. We do our little hike, and we got to the point where we're circling back to my vehicle, and I told my son, I said, well, do you want to take like the main way back, or we can take the side trail? And he always takes the path less traveled. He likes, you know, going more the more rural or wild the path, the happier he is. So we go down this path, and I see him stop. He's in much better shape than I am, so he's usually about, you know, 20 yards, if not more, ahead of me. I see him stop and straighten up at this kind of fork in the trail. And I reach up to him. I was like, what do you see? And he said, I think that's a raccoon up there. And I looked, and sure enough, it was a raccoon. And he took another step towards us. I said, no, we're going to take another trail here, buddy. It shouldn't be out during the day. And, he turned around, and as he did, this thing just started barreling at us, and it's hissing and growling and making all kinds of noise. And so I told him at that point, I said, run. And
this raccoon is doing this?
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's just snarling and hissing and just coming barreling full speed at us. Yikes. And I started running. I took one look back and like, I'm not outrunning this thing. This, you know, so the only thing I could do is put myself between it and my son. And when I hike, I carry, for what is all intents and purposes, a wizard's staff. It's a walking stick, but it's nice and thick. I need.
We all know what it really is.
Yeah, we know why you have it.
It's all good.
I have one of those too.
It's covered with protection symbols and so forth. But
nice.
So I just, you know, and this is through no skill that I know of, unless I'm just inherently, you know, great at you know, smashing things with a walking stick. I was able to break this thing's back before it got to me. Just the first hit, I broke its back and stopped it.
You shall not pass.
Exactly.
100%.
So 100%. After I catch up to my son, I said, my only regret is I didn't yell "You shall not pass" as I brought my stick down on this foul beast. Well, later it hits me that we've been talking about Lord of the Rings the night before.
Is the raccoon dead? Is he dead?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Okay.
He didn't pass.
All right.
Then it hits
even for a rabid evil raccoon, I don't want it to suffer.
Yeah. Well,
he did. It was quick.
Okay.
Then it hits me that we were talking about catching raccoons the night before. So then we go back to the Crossroads parking lot, and you know, I've had a lot to think about this experience in the time, and there were families in the park that day. There was a woman who jogged by like literally the same path right after, you know, minutes after this happened. So she was in no way prepared for that. These families that were there with their kids were in no way prepared for that. If it had to happen to anybody that day, I was the person that was, you know, kind of most prepared for this to happen, I suppose. So, you know, I hate to say I'm glad it happened to me, but if it happened to anybody there that day, I guess it was better it happened to me. But anyway, we get back to the Crossroads parking lot, and I call the park ranger, and they say, okay, we'll send somebody out. And the ranger shows up, and you can look this up on York County Parks website. There's a ranger named Breedlove. And the name tag on the ranger is Breedlove. And I see that and my heart just sinks. And it was the most, I mean, it was just the most oppressive feeling. it wasn't good. It wasn't good at all. And I just thought.
So you're seeing all these synchronicities.
Yeah, you're steeped in the world of synchronicity. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But you're seeing them as negative signs because you tracing back to the actions of like not taking that skull.
Well, because shit's going down.
Exactly. Yeah. I this was me getting my butt smacked for breaking the rules of folklore. For asking for things to begin with, and B, for you know, when I was given what I was asked for not taking it. And I really feel like, you know, it all wove together. I mean, and that's just my feeling. I you know, I can't prove any of this. It's just my gut feeling as regards it. And it was very heavy, and it took me a long time before I went back there. I've been hiking there again recently and things seem okay, but, it was just not a happy time.
That's an incredible story, man.
I want this story to serve as a reminder to our listeners, aside from all the warnings that come with this story. There is no such thing as boredom, okay? Because you can turn a day or two at the park into an adventure, all right? So, okay, maybe we shouldn't be interacting with folklore and nature this way, but isn't it so much more exciting than just being bored? I don't know. I mean, you tell me not to do this stuff, and I'm like, well, now I kind of want to go do it.
Well, again, what I will say is with gifting, like in my experience, you will get results, but I would not do food and I wouldn't ask for things. So find other things, rocks, pebbles, shiny things, whatever.
What's at stake, Tim? What's at the ultimate stake when it does and if it does go wrong?
You know, the other side of that is I wasn't hurt, right? Mm-hmm, so I didn't get, I mean, I had to get rabies shots because I had open cuts on my legs because I was hiking in shorts and I got into thorns and stuff before. But, you know, so just for the safety aspect of it, I did have to get rabies shots, but I didn't really get attacked. I didn't get bitten. I was able to stop it. It didn't get by me or get to my son or anything. So, you know, the other aspect of it is, you know, it didn't really go horribly wrong. I think it was more of a, like I said, a smack on the ass telling me like, hey, yeah, you've done wrong here. You know, just talking to witnesses, I've had some witnesses who've had some horrible, horrible things happen as regards to the other whose lives have been changed, you know, forever, and who have, I'm not a psychologist, but you know, I can't diagnose it, but what I would assume would be PTSD from what they're telling me.
100%. Yeah.
So, you know, this stuff can go sideways and it can go sideways quickly. So,
well, in the book, in volume one, you guys give examples of people who started taking coolers out to areas and offering food to Bigfoot, you know, as a gift. And then once they stop doing that, there's suddenly activity happening at their house where like stones are being thrown at them or people's dogs turn up dead, you know, that kind of stuff where it's like you really are asking to engage with something that if you don't maintain that relationship, when you cut it off, they might come after you. Yeah. Or their friends will.
Yeah, I mean, my advice would be to people to like look at the quote unquote rules. Look what they tell you in folklore to do and not to do as regards this stuff. I think there's a reason that stuff survived. It's because it in general it works. I would be real careful. Like I said, I wouldn't do it at my house. I have no problem with you know, I still will practice gifting, but like I said, it's not food and I don't ask for things. And then I got some very good advice from Brother Richard, who's a monk that has appeared on Strange Familiars, who has done some very interesting work with regards to stuff, including participated in exorcisms and things like that. And his advice to me was that, you know, don't get obsessed with it. And those gifts are not permanent gifts. So if you're gifted anything, that doesn't go in your collection. That goes in a pile to re-gift somewhere else at some point.
Bryce, I hope you know where that marble
I got some
is, buddy.
I got some work to do tonight. Joshua, I want to bring it back to you real quick. And you know, I know right before the break, Riley kind of asked, where does folklore turn into fact? And then to sort of go on what we're talking about, the dangerous elements, you know, when does this stuff get nasty? And to even add to that, like, You know, what's your take on this whole missing 411 stuff?
Well, Bryce, question at a time.
Okay. Bryce, well, I think my question.
Yeah, sure.
I'm interested in your take on sort of,
you know, because I do think there's a phenomenon taking place in these parks and these people that go missing mysteriously. I do think there's something to it. And I don't know, I guess since we're talking about the dangerous elements of this stuff, what's your take on that, Joshua?
Well, as Tim has alluded to in the past, you know, folklore oftentimes is just a convenient way of sort of passing on real, quite practical knowledge. You know, the way that it's described might not be subject to literal interpretation, but the end result is like, you know, don't eat that berry. No, it's not because it's possessed by a demon, but it is poisonous.
Right, sort of thing. Right.
That's what Tim would say, and I tend to believe it. You know, I'm not entirely sure. I go back and forth on the danger of these things, not in terms of whether or not there is danger, because there is, you know, tangible danger. It's definitely something that happens. But, you know, I'm not entirely sure how often it is malicious. Sometimes I think that whatever this other intelligence that we're dealing with, and I keep it sort of umbrellaed like that, because I do think that it's, I do think that we're seeing a lot of the same thing reflected in these different topics. I'm not sure that if sometimes what we're seeing is not something like, you know, a kid playing with a butterfly and playing a little bit too roughly with it. Or, you know, to use another Animal Kingdom metaphor, you know, a shark. You know, the shark isn't evil. The shark doesn't hate you. But a shark is going to do what a shark is meant to do.
Right.
So, you know, I think that those are two things to sort of be wary of. I would say, you know, anyone who's interested in looking at this stuff, make sure that you're prepared to have it look back at you. Doesn't look back at me very often, knock on wood, but it happens far too often for me to say that it's not a recurring theme. As far as the missing 411 thing goes, you know, I've said a lot of times that I think that the missing 411 phenomena really is a paranormal Rorschach test.
Wow.
You know, I realize fully the irony of me saying it's mostly, you know, fairy phenomena, because that says a lot more about me than it does about the phenomena. I will say that I think that the most consistent suite of folklore that aligns with the missing 411 stuff is indeed a lot of the fairy phenomena. But again, I don't think that the fairy phenomena was necessarily describing fairy folk. I think it was just another way to describe this other intelligence that we interface with. But, you know, wow. within a lot of that, especially Western European, even though fairy folklore is worldwide, and it's strikingly consistent worldwide, a lot of that sort of Western European folklore warns against wearing the color red. It warns against, the dangers of finding yourself in a boulder field or, you know, around running water, because that's where the fairies live. It warns you, against... you know, storms being a component of how the fairies travel. And of course, a lot of these other world entities travel. In a lot of medieval epics, the way that you would actually mark passage into the other world was through a fog or a storm or a blizzard or something. So that's entirely consistent with these people sort of lapsing out of our reality into another one. You know, one of the things that I found most interesting was whenever someone was to encounter the Minnehune, which are roughly speaking sort of Hawaiian analogs to the fairy folk, that you would be instructed to, you know, strip naked and plant yourself face down in the dirt, which is exactly the way that a lot of people were found in the missing 411 stuff. So, I think that it's a pretty consistent set of markers for that phenomena. But at the same time, I don't feel comfortable saying, well, missing 411 is because of fairies. You know, I think I think it's because of this other that we're dealing with, but what that other's true face is, I'm not entirely sure. My favorite, when you guys read Passport to Magonia, was it one of the newer versions with the cover with the,
the
alien?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So what's great about that cover is it's got the gray alien with like three masks, and one's a robot and one's a fairy queen and one's a demon or whatever.
Yeah. Love that.
And, the actual original artwork for that reveals that the gray alien itself is a hand puppet and the actual puppeteer is off outside the frame.
Right.
And love the elegance of that as a metaphor. Like that kind of sums up.
That's it, man.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly how I feel.
Yeah, I knew there was a reason I asked you that question. Because that's the answer I wanted. You're right. I mean, it's like, no, that's it, right? It's like this phenomenon, these markers are still, it's still happening, right? It never went away. You know, it might have changed. It might have morphed. It might be, you know, it might have new symptoms and signs. But man, it's still going on.
Yep.
Well, we are sadly running out of time, but before we wrap up, I want to ask you guys about this other. What is this thing? Is it a trickster intelligence? Is it a fifth dimensional consciousness? What is
our
the
creator?
Thing?
Could be anything.
What is the thing that you guys that is looking back at us when we go looking at it?
I'm going to borrow from Terrence McKenna and describe it as an ecology of souls. I know that's kind of a little bit of a sidestep. I could say something about dimensions, blah, 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 but, you know, how many angels can dance on the head of your pin? Right. You know, I really don't think that actually answers the question any more accurately or any more concisely than saying that it really does have something to do with the barrier between the physical and the non-physical and the barrier between the material and the spiritual. And that's sort of where I am and sort of one of the projects that I'm working on right now is parsing out those ideas.
Wow.
So this love might that. All be just communication with the spirit realm.
You know, I'm that's actually so
that's a fair answer. I mean, yeah.
Well, and then to add on to what McKenna's quote, I mean, the ecology of souls, it sort of hints at that even though it can split off into personality and into individualism, it's really like a free flowing miasma, you know, almost like a collective, you know, it has its own thing going on. Right. So is it really Aunt Tilly or is Aunt Tilly just another splinter of this sort of, you know, this ecology of mm-hmm. collective souls, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think of something that I listened to one of his old interviews or one of his old lectures that really stuck with me. And he makes reference to his belief at the time, because, you know, it's always ever changing, but his belief that the DMT functioned as sort of a bungee into the Bardo. And I really like that idea, because if you look at some of these similarities, you can trace a line. That's what I'm doing right now in my work, is you can trace a line through fairies and the dead and shamanic states and burial mounds and the wild hunt and ley lines and the abduction experience. And all this stuff really does seem to sort of have at its pivot point, this idea of this phase change between souls as they enter or leave whatever this plane of existence is.
God. Well, we look forward to that.
Tim, what about you? What's this? What's the other in your mind?
Well, I think ecology is a good word because there's an ecosystem out there, and I think that people will tend to get wrapped up in this idea that, you know, everything is demons. When no, there's good and there's bad out there, and there's everything in between. And I think that's why that word ecology is a good one for it, because there's a lot out there, you know. As someone who constantly, you know, because it's my job now, constantly dealing with this, either in the form of interviewing witnesses or you know, on my own or writing about it, et cetera, you hear a lot of people say, well, it's all fairies or it's all the djinn and that explains it. Or it's all the fairies that explains it. Or it's all poltergeists that explains it. And to them, I say, yes. Yes, it is all the djinn and it is all the poltergeists and it is all fairies. It's, you know, all of the above. And more. So, you know, Josh probably said it more eloquently than I did, but, you know, I tend to agree with that idea. There's something other. I don't think it's all necessarily one thing, but there seems to be so much in common between the Bigfoot phenomena and poltergeist phenomena and, you know, alien abduction phenomena and so forth that I can no longer personally entirely separate them.
Wow. Well, you know what we love about guys like you is you know, you're helping us burrow closer to the truth. And for that, we thank you so much. Yeah, I mean, that's incredible. God, we're going to have you guys back hopefully in the future so we can continue this incredible conversation.
Well, we won't say goodbye quite just yet, you guys, because there's a game that we like to play with all of our guests. And I think that we should wrap up today's episode with this game because our listeners would be disappointed if we didn't play it with the two of you. I'm going to go down a list of phenomena. And if you're open to it, you're going to say believe it, even if you're not, you know, 100% there. If you're not open to it, you're going to say bullshit.
This is I'm going to be a paranormal slut. Here we go.
This is BCC's own Rorschach test. So,
this is a game that we like to call bullshit
or believe it.
All right, Josh and Tim, on your mark, get set, ghosts.
Believe it.
Believe it. But UFO. Not necessarily the spirits of the dead.
Yes, same with Tim.
UFOs.
Believe it.
Sure, absolutely.
But not necessarily extraterrestrials.
There you go.
I think we know where this is headed. The qualifiers around.
Yeah. And if there's anything, we can always come back to it. Bigfoot.
Believe
1,000% believe it, but don't think it's an undiscovered monkey.
ESP.
Believe it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
believe, sure. Believe it more than anything else on this list, actually.
Well, I haven't gotten to unicorns yet.
Yeah, he already knows. Cause he knows because ESP.
Shadow people.
Believe it.
Yeah, I've heard enough tales.
Yeah. Unicorns.
Bullshit.
Josh, you know you're going to see a unicorn.
Yeah, I know I am, right?
It's going to walk up in your backyard and you're going to be like, shit.
Alien abductions.
Believe it.
Believe it, but I don't think you leave your bed.
Yeti. Yeah.
But you should believe it. I mean,
yeah, sure. Under the Bigfoot umbrella, absolutely.
Mothman.
Believe it, probably not a flesh and blood cryptid.
Yeah, believe it, can't be a flesh and blood cryptid. Cannot be.
Out of body experiences.
Well, sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Tarot cards.
I've seen tarot cards. I know they exist. Yes.
I've been waiting for that answer and no one's done that.
Retroactive bias. That's my answer.
I don't know. Have you seen Josh? Have you seen Jodorowsky? Have you seen his documentary where he does a tarot?
I have not.
Absolutely worth checking out. He says the future is shit. I do not tell the future. But he uses them as a sort of a psychological device, and it's pretty amazing to watch.
Yeah, I guess that should be my qualifier. I think people use a lot of it in the wrong way. But as far as it being a device to parse something objective, yeah, sure, believe it.
Demonically possessed dolls.
Oh boy. I do so many of these paranormal conventions, and so many people have their collection of haunted dolls they bring. Any poor, sad, old doll that looks vaguely spooky is haunted these days.
Obviously.
I mean, I guess it could happen, but most of these things, no, they're just dolls.
Believe it on rare occasions. How about that?
The healing power of crystals.
Ooh, bullshit-ish. I mean, here's the thing. Like, if someone believes that a crystal will heal them and they're tapping into a placebo effect, it's not the crystal, but it's their belief in the crystal. So bingo. I'm going to have to go with bullshit. From the literal interpretation, bullshit.
I'll agree 100% with what Josh said.
So Star Wars figures can act as a crystal.
Yeah, man. They're those crystals. Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I put them all over my naked body when I have a fever.
Honda Baba broke my fever.
Yeah. Walrus Man is my thermometer. An alien spacecraft crashed at Roswell.
I'm going to go with bullshit, actually.
Yeah, I do not believe that.
Loch Ness Monster.
Believe it, not a cryptid.
Yeah, there's something there, but I don't think it's an undiscovered dinosaur or something.
Dinosaur ghost.
Atlantis.
Atlantis? Believe it? Agnostic? I can't pick agnostic, can I? Believe it. Why not?
Yeah, I think I believe. I mean, there was something like that. I don't know exactly what the New Age people think it was, but...
Haunted houses.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think I know where this is going to go, but Skunk Ape.
Believe it.
Hell yeah.
It's under the Bigfoot umbrella, yes.
The Jersey Devil.
Bullshit, actually.
I put it in the same category as Mothman. I think people are seeing something, but it's not some kind of, you know, you're not going to find a nest with Mothman eggs in it, and you're not going to find a baby Jersey Devil anywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
The Biblical Devil.
Believe it. Yeah.
The devil's going to show up in your backyard.
I know where Tim's coming from. It's because if you take the face value of each of these, like half of them become bullshit, right?
Yeah.
Right. Sure. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, yes, I guess. But again, I think people have strange interpretations of this stuff that's informed by, you know, pop culture and everything else, and they don't quite get it. But sure, yeah, we'll say yes.
Speaking to the Dead.
Believe it.
Yes, believe it.
Mermaids. Or Mersquatch.
Yeah, you might want to change that one to Mersquatch in honor of Footprints End.
Bullshit. In the way that you mean it, bullshit.
Yeah, I guess again, it's like the unicorn. Like the minute you say like, no, this one's going to visit you. But, you know, as people understand mermaids, we'll say, yeah.
Yeah.
The government is hiding the truth about Sasquatch.
Bullshit.
1000% bullshit. They don't know shit.
Yeah.
Past lives.
Believe it. Yeah. The work of Ian Stevenson is really compelling.
Yep. Agreed.
Yeah, I've read some interesting stuff. I'll say believe it. There's a caveat to every one of these, but yeah, just basically believe it. Sure.
Life on other planets.
Sure. If there's life here, I'm sure there's almost limitless number of other planets. I mean, they found life on Mars, didn't they? Didn't they find bacteria?
Yep, pretty much. Life after death.
Believe it.
Yeah.
Caveat. Yeah, it's caveat.
caveat, but yes.
I think we put an asterisk to each one of these. This is fantastic. Guys, you just passed bullshit or believe it. Great job.
I didn't know it was a pass fail. I'm glad.
Well, you got through it. That's all that really matters. But yeah, I love it. Yeah, I also love when people go, well, not the way you mean it. And it's like, well, I'm just putting the word out there. I don't actually mean it in any way.
Right.
But that to me is the fun of it, is unpacking what these symbolically mean to people. So
yeah, just quickly, I interviewed a guest on the podcast recently, and she was very interested in fairy lore. And she was telling me that she always told people, like, you know, the Tinkerbell type fairy is complete bullshit, and that's, you know, creation of Victorian times and blah, blah, blah. And lo and behold, you know, a week after she tells people this, she's in her backyard and these weird lights come out of the woods, and inside one of these lights, she sees this little like Tinkerbell type fairy as if to tell her, like, you know, you don't know.
Yeah.
I guess the way to see something cool is say you don't believe in it.
Who knows? Who knows?
Maybe that's the key. All right. Josh, Tim, we don't really know where to find Bigfoot, but where can our listeners find you and find your books?
Where the Footprints End, both volumes are on Amazon. All of our other books, I'll go ahead and speak for Josh. All of our other books are there as well. If you look up Joshua Cutchin or if you look up Timothy Renner, you'll get all of our books. I do have a book that's not available on Amazon. It's a book of my artwork. If you like my illustrations, it's called Apparitions, Illustrations of the Other. And that is available directly from me. All of my contact information is at strangefamiliars.com. It's where my podcast is, but any contact information for that goes right to me.
You can find me at joshuacutchin.com, joshuacutchin.com. And as Tim said, all of my books are available on Amazon, but I am certainly, with the exception of Where the Footprints End, which is because it was printed through them, it's the only place to get it. I definitely advocate for people to go through any other sort of any other option that they have.
Indiebound.org. We're always plugging that for people, and if they help support their local bookshop during this time as well.
And I believe that you can reach out to Timothy or I for autographed copies of our books directly from us as well.
Awesome.
Fantastic. And of course, you can find us at Bigfoot Collectors Club on Instagram, at Bigfoot Pod on Twitter. Write to us with your own paranormal encounters at Bigfoot or Bigfoot Collectors Club at gmail.com. And please do us a favor, go to Apple Podcasts, give us a 5-star review. If you do, we might read it here on the show, just like this one that says, "Wow, 5 stars, such a great podcast. Michael, Riley, and Bryce are interesting and hilarious. Can't get enough." Thank you to Slocrates22 for that review. Before we say goodbye, Bryce, Riley, anything to plug?
You know what? We just entered a new promo code for my new game, Dirty Picture Cover Up. If you type in the promo code BCCDPCU, you will get 15% off. So use that and get yours today.
Fantastic.
And I would just say we're still in the pre-sale for the new Sprinter record at alternativetentacles.com. You can pre-order it on vinyl or CD. It comes with a cool limited edition t-shirt. Alternative Tentacles is a super rad historic label, and we're really excited to be releasing with them.
I'm going to go ahead and plug Where the Footprints End, Volume 1 and 2, even though I haven't read it yet. Definitely check out Tim and Josh's work. It's great. And we'll, boys, gentlemen, we'll definitely have you back on the show sometime. Thank you so much for being here tonight. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
We are all huge fans, truly.
What a treat. Absolute pleasure. Thanks, y'all.
Great. Thank you so much. All right, listeners, we'll be back next week. Until then, good night.
And go get regressed. All right. Thank you so much, you guys. That was a treat. Awesome. Bigfoot Collectors Club is produced by Riley Bray. Our theme song is Come Alone by Sun Eaters, courtesy of Lotus Pool Records. If you like the show, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It really helps get the podcast to more listeners. To support the show, check out our Patreon page at patreon.com/Bigfoot Collectors Club and unlock multiple reward episodes every month.
Hey guys, Heather Ashley here, host of the Big Mad True Crime Podcast. If you're looking for a true crime podcast with all of the details and none of the small talk, you have found your people. Each week, we dive deep into a new case and learn everything there is to know, from getting to know the victim and the impact their case has had on those around them, to the investigation into what happened to them and who is or might be responsible. And if the bad guy looks like he might drink whiskey by a dumpster or has the social skills of an ogre, we say it because we were all thinking it anyway. As the name suggests, we get big mad over true crime, and I would love to have you join our incredible community of listeners with big hearts and zero time for small talk. Subscribe to Big Mad True Crime anywhere you listen to podcasts and listen to new episodes every single Monday.
Hey, this is Eric Molinsky, host of the podcast Imaginary Worlds. Each episode, I explore different sci-fi fantasy genres, talking with filmmakers, novelists, game designers, cosplayers, comic book artists, and anyone who works in the field of make-believe. I also look at the fan experience, asking, why do we suspend our disbelief? You can subscribe to Imaginary Worlds wherever you get your podcasts.